So we were just at the point talking about the Shambhala connection to humanity. This is the we're beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 106B, and I'm just reading a sentence that we already discussed a little bit, the trembling response of humanity through the medium of the most enlightened and sensitive people in each country, because these are the ones who really feel the Shambhala impact in a more positive way, the trembling response of humanity to this influence and the corresponding magnetic interplay between the great center at Shambhala and the human center is a steadily growing fact registered and noted by the watching hierarchy, and making certain changes in hierarchical approach, I would say, inevitable and unavoidable. Even the way disciples are now cultivated shows that there is a change in the hierarchical program with respect to the training of those who eventually will take their part in their place within the hierarchy. This has been planned from the very first coming of the Lords of the Flame, considering them as the 108 Kumaras or the 105 Kumaras who came from the Venus chain of our Earth scheme to our Earth chain. Some 18.5 million years ago, from that very first approach and the establishment of Shambhala hierarchy on Earth, this time in which we are through which we are now living has been planned, the Shambhalic approach. There were earlier Shambhala impacts, very rare, one that brought the Lemurian civilization to an end, and one through volcanic eruption, and one that brought the flood, which ended a great part of the Atlantean civilization, certainly changed the direction in which it was heading, and then much, much, much later, beginning with 1825, millions of years later. Amazing. And now there's a crescendo of these Shambhala impacts as the great center where the will of God is known draws closer to humanity. And the sensitive can be aware of this divine will, and the others will simply unconsciously respond in their vehicles, which will usually be subjected to great stress. But the hierarchy is watching the well-calibrated touches of Shambhala and seeing what the result is and how they might take advantage of this result, and bringing good out of seeming evil. This is the great ability of Sanat Kumara, something which humanity has not yet quite mastered, which the hierarchy is mastering, and which Sanat Kumara has mastered. So here we are in Esoteric Astrology Adventure 106B, and this Shambhala approach, these impacts, these changes, all this, says the Tibetan, augurs well for the future, in spite of the temporary misuse of forces as discussed. Hitler and his evil group, his evil gang, as the Tibetan calls them, misuse these forces. And even today, they are being misused by willful people and willful groups in whom the quality of love is not sufficiently developed. Remember, as the Christ said, no man cometh to the Father except through me. So necessarily and simultaneously, this interplay evokes response from the unprepared and unready, and the unready, and from the wrongly oriented and the selfishly polarized person. So it's a time when the selfish will, even now, is being tremendously stimulated in certain groups, and with this the disciples of the world have to contend. And it isn't easy because these negative elemental forces are empowered. In other words, men ruled by their elemental natures are now empowered. And resisting the true approach of God's will, or the approach of God's true will, they are resisting the plan. They are resisting the promise of the Aquarian Age, and perhaps never more intensely so than during this next 100 years, before the Aquarian Age becomes truly established in 2117, according to the Tibetan. This stimulates the will to power in the individual and fosters personality integration of the wrong kind and its enforced desires. I suppose this is meant that the desires are strengthened and the personality seeks to fulfill these desires and enforces many things upon others, enforces the fulfillment of its desires upon others in a way that is unloving and hurtful, harmful. So the will to power in the individual. I remember the Tibetan told us that the group that was gathered around Hitler, and I suppose Hitler himself, you know, a very powerful first-ray group in a negative sense. And if the first-ray was not their soul ray, then at least they were on the first sub-ray in their soul, the Tibetan discussed. So this is the inverted use of the Shambhala force, and we have to be on the lookout today for those who also invert the use of the Shambhala force and make it serve lower desire instead of the divine purpose. There are two sixes involved, if you know what I mean. The monad located upon the sixth plane from below, and the desire level, the sixth plane from above on the cosmic physical plane. And some are so animated that they will attempt to enforce their lower desires willfully upon others. Others stand as agents of the divine will found on the monadic level and seek to see that will expressed through the power of love. It is with those that we seek to ally ourselves, because they are those who are working out the divine plan, the working out of which is inevitable, but can be delayed, we've been told. And somewhere, DK talked about a possible delay of another 300 years. Elsewhere, he seemed to hint at the possibility that some thousands of years could be involved. Let us hope that this is not the case. Thus, through these personalities and their wrong emphasis and teachings, nations, which are really great individuals, nations are also misled, again temporarily, and the Shambhala force is wrongly employed and directed. This is always a calculated risk when releasing greater energies into the human kingdom with its present unredeemed condition. The misappropriation of divine energy, well, all energy is divine really, but we are witnessing the misappropriation of these greater energies which could be used to advance the plan and the purpose. Instead, they empower the will of certain selfish individuals. The result of this dual effect of the Shambhala force at the present time is the precipitation of that cleansing but terrible process we call war. He puts the idea of cleansing first, so we will assess what war really is. The immortality of the inner God, of course, guarantees the survival, no matter what happens to those aggregations we call form. So the Shambhala force, presently, or at least at that time, and even presently, is involved in the precipitation of that cleansing but terrible process we call war, and it carries with it a great deal of terror to the personality. This war is the consummation of the conflict between the pairs of opposites, the soul and personality, of humanity, and within many individuals, and the basic duality of manifestation, spirit and matter, right? Spirit and matter. Whoop. Let me go back here and get one of those little brackets that I find so useful. So the war is the consummation of the conflict between the pairs of opposites, which are, let us note, soul and personality, and the basic duality of manifestation, which is spirit and matter, and is not motivated basically, as have been all previous wars, usually the desire for acquisition and territorial aggrandizement. Of course, those elements were there. But something more fundamental and intrinsic to the development of the planet is at stake in the wars we have been experiencing. And should there be any kind of third world war, this will definitely be the case. There is already a third world war. It's occurring on the mental and emotional planes, with occasional outbreaks on the physical plane, but nothing yet that can be called a physical third world war, which is likely to be rapid and cataclysmic. So it's not motivated basically as have been all previous wars. When I refer to this conflict, I would remind you that to us, the workers on the inner side, the 1914 conflict and this one are two phases of one condition. It seems that he may, you know, this book, as I say, was written in the 1930s, but it seems as if he is speaking from within the context of the Second World War. Anyway, he does tell us that it's one war, one process, 1914 to 1945. In various places, he discusses that. The war, when held in a steady focus by the guides of the race, and when not permitted to pursue too long and too terrible a course, he speaks about the possible enervation, possible exhaustion of humanity, should that take place, can most definitely further the ends of evolution by creating situations which foster mental development under spiritual guidance, not simply mental development, but under spiritual guidance. Of the concrete mind, we've had quite a bit. Even the new schools are formed to counteract the strict development of the concrete mind, which is not guided by spirituality. So even though many die, many lose their form, better configurations, better forms are awaiting them as they incarnate in the future, and thus the ends of evolution are furthered and advantages given to them. I'm sure there are many in the Bailey groups and Agni Yoga groups who perhaps died in the Second World War or the First World War and have come back subject to new conditions and with the possibility of improved circumstances. So such a war, if not allowed to go on too long, can further the ends of evolution by creating situations that foster mental development under spiritual guidance, necessitating clear thought a thing rare to find. He reminds us of our present status, even the apparently accomplished thinkers of the world. I wonder if they live up to the Tibetan standard of clarity. The removal of undesirable conditions by their emergence into prominence. This is happening very much in the world today, and what planet is it that's involved in this emergence of undesirable conditions, emergence into prominence? It would be the planet Pluto, wouldn't it? Which is so powerful today in Capricorn, dragging to the surface, as Capricorn does rule an aspect of the hell worlds, dragging to the surface that which is hellish in human nature and exposing it to the general gaze, where judgment upon it can be passed and a decision can be made to continue or discontinue. So we have what the war has done. We have the promotion of evolution through the fostering not only of mental development, but mental development under spiritual guidance, the growth of clear thought, and the removal of undesirable conditions under the first ray of Pluto, still active today, as so many terrible things are emerging into sight, and by the consequent removal of their originating sources, as Pluto drags to the surface before the first initiation of humanity, so many factors which are clearly undesirable, and also by definite effects produced upon the emotional body of humanity, by corporate suffering and pain. So this is the path of pain, the path, the purpose of Sanat Kumara, the purpose, well, let's put a capital on it, which necessitates pain and suffering, which are great sensitizers to the unity which truly exists and which disabuse us of the illusion that we are separate beings. When we begin to feel not only our own pain, but the pain of others, then we know that they are intimately related to us. The suffering, deprivation, anxiety, and distress can lead to a reversal of the human orientation upon the wheel of life. And what this seems to suggest, that during the fifth petal experience, when the first reversal does take place, there is much pain and suffering. From a certain perspective, we can relate not only Leo to that petal, but also, let's see if we go backwards in this way, starting with Pisces, and it is legitimate also to start with Pisces as the first sign. Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, Sagittarius, Scorpio. So Scorpio, too, is one of the rulers of the fifth petal. And when you think about assigning the elements to the different tiers of petals, we have earth to the knowledge petals and water to the love petals. Scorpio would fit there very much. A sign of bitter woe and wrenching detachment from that which is held dear. So the reversal occurs in relation to Scorpio and also in relation to Libra. Libra has Uranus as its esoteric ruler, and Scorpio has Uranus exalted ruler. Maybe we shouldn't call it ruler, but the planet of exaltation in Scorpio. And Uranus is a planet of reversal, going a new way. So the suffering, deprivation, anxiety, distress can lead to a reversal of not only the individual, but all of human orientation upon the wheel of life. And let's just say preparing humanity for the first initiation, which is imminent. When the Christ returns, as I have said, it will signal that humanity has actually taken the first initiation. It's not that, Christ will initiate individuals into the first degree and into the second degree, but that condition within humanity, which we call the first initiation, will have been achieved. And the achievement is signaled by his appearance among us, so it will not be immediate. The masters first have to externalize in the major centers and gather their disciples and be recognized, noted, and consulted as great sources of wisdom and guidance. Sounds like it'll take a little while yet. So, just as it does in the case of the individual aspirant, I think so many of us have been through this reversal, otherwise we would not be studying Master DK and interested in these matters, which are definitely pertaining to the reversed wheel, if we had not been through this kind of suffering. Probably the type of suffering, its recollection, the extent of it is hidden from us at the moment, but one day there will be a coming into the light and a revelation of all that we have experienced in the three lower worlds. And we will understand causatively what has brought us to our present point of aspiration and aspirational intent to achieve higher states of consciousness for the purposes not only of liberation, but more importantly, of service to our fellow human beings. It can lead to the focusing of all the life tendencies upon a world of truer values and reality, and thus inaugurate the new and better civilization for which we all hope. And now Taurus is the sign of values. And Venus, its ruler, is deeply connected with values. It's exoteric ruler. So one of our major services, is to help with the establishing of new and better values. Better, let's call it, more spiritual values. Oh, how about spelling? Okay. So we see that so many of the mistakes that humanity is making even today are dependent upon that which they value most. And sometimes these things are rather low, and the tendency to give into egoism makes these things seem valuable, but they're only valuable to the lower ego and not valuable in a higher sense. So by the nature of a human being's values, we can know something of the spiritual status of the human being. And this is something we have to help inculcate in our students and those that we may influence spiritually. Anyone who comes into our sphere of influence can be raised to value higher things. Just ask a person, what do you value most? And you'll get a very clear idea about whether that person is on the reversed, ordinary, or reversing wheel. Three stages, one of which is transitional. Just try this experiment. What do you value most? And be ready for some interesting responses. Looking at the world today, if you could but see it as we, the teachers on the inner side see it, you would become aware of such a refocusing and reorienting on all sides. The reorientation towards the soul of humanity, preparation for the first initiation, and the reorienting of some even towards true being or spirit. The word re is so very Uranian. It means, in a way, to do again in a new way. Renovate. To do it again, but to do it better. And we've certainly had our opportunity to do things badly over millions of years. The terribly slow progress of humanity is mentioned by DK and how much patience it takes for the teachers on the inner side to abide the kind of stupidity and poor choices, poor values, that the human being has had over its millions of years of slowly progressing through ignorant states. So, a reorientation and a refocusing is underway, a reversal is underway. A reversal is in progress. Now, those who take the first initiation have already reversed the wheel and are, in a way, on a wheel that is turning in two directions because they have not yet mastered their retrogressive tendencies. And for humanity as a whole, humanity, the world disciple, not in the third degree sense, but in a larger and more generic sense, humanity has to reverse its orientation. It doesn't mean that all human beings will take the first initiation, but a sufficient number to leaven the mass and to reorient general human desire and thought towards higher objectives. We don't know the percentages of those who will actually take individually the third initiation, but we know it will be sufficient to lift humanity to into a new civilization and present new objectives which the masses will sense and pursue. And this is happening right now, even now through pain and suffering of many. Again, however, the time element comes in, the brain, that brain-conditioned sense of awareness. I suppose it's only after we have a type of consciousness which is not characterized by brain conditioning that we will know what the ending of the time sense really is. There are greater and lesser senses of time. I cannot think that all sense of time will end when we cease having a consciousness conditioned by the brain, because, as I said, even the great Logoi, they have a certain time-space schedule. But in their higher consciousness, they know time and space to be illusory, or playthings, as the Tibetan has said. For the master, time and space are his playthings. So the time element does come in here, that brain-conditioned sense of awareness. So when we are outside the brain, in our astral body, or at night in our mental or causal body, we may have a very, very different sense of what time is. We have to disabuse ourselves of this particular illusion, which presents a rigorous sequentiality as if it were reality. It may be a brain-conditioned actuality, but it's not reality. So we have to negate the effect of brain conditioning upon our consciousness. And our entire spiritual training will have this eventual effect. Again, however, the time element comes in, and the problem with which the hierarchy is now concerned is to see that the present conflict does not persist unduly long. Now, you know, is he writing from the time of the actual war? It would seem so. But perhaps the conflict already raging on the astral plane was occurring even in the 1930s. Following the great attempt in 1936 to suffuse the human consciousness with goodwill, there was a steady approach towards a warlike situation on the physical plane. But the war already existed on the mental and astral planes, and then precipitated with certain German aggressions. So the hierarchy wants to see that the present conflict does not persist unduly long. After all, they're dealing with time, aren't they? I mean, they have the sense that time is an illusion, but they consider it in their calculations as they attempt to rework the relationships of the lower world to more reflect those of the higher world. And hierarchy being concerned then to awaken all the nations, without exception, to a sense of the dramatic import of the present time and of their right share and their responsibility, and thus to engineer a climax wherein the correct world lesson may be learnt. And this we can call, I suppose, the correct lesson of the war, which, what can we say, would be mutually shared responsibility, human unity, the likeness of human beings to each other, and the overcoming of virulent separativeness fostered by certain evil individuals and nations who fell under their spell. The war should have broken down the sense of separateness. I wonder, did it break down the sense of national separateness, perhaps? But today, in our world, we have a virulent sense of religious separateness, and D.K. told us that the major problem of humanity is essentially the religious problem. So we're not done with the lesson. The overcoming of separateness and the viewing of humanity as one being, all the members of which should be given opportunity and allowed under law to work out that aspect of God's will which is resident within them. So it's difficult to know here whether we are actually within the war, or D.K. is considering the war to have already begun, in a sense, even before it broke out on the physical plane. So the hierarchy wants to see the conflict not go on unduly long. Remember, they are already counting it from 1914. That people should awaken in their nations to the opportunity and take responsibility for the condition in which humanity finds itself. And to bring about a climax, perhaps the close of the war, and the giving out of the great invocation, and with the decision of the Christ to reappear, we're in the correct world lesson, not just the individual lesson, but the correct world lesson may be learned. And what is that world lesson? Well, you know, there's many ways we can look at it, but one world, one humanity. Whereby the world may be purified by the elimination of the undesirable elements which hinder the new era and the upspringing of a more spiritual civilization. Well, those people conditioned by separative thought, by separative, of course, in no way have all such people been eliminated or driven back awaiting another incarnation. The breaking up of certain thought forms, of course, would be very important, because as people are incarnating, they can become subject to these thought forms. But it's a Plutonic purpose that this great war had. Pluto is the planet of elimination, and the elimination of undesirable elements, whether in the individual or in nations or in humanity, is a Plutonic affair. So, Plutonic process. But Pluto, in a way, clears the path to the threshold of the new age. We had intimations of a more spiritual civilization following the war. We still do. There is, however, a great re-amassing of humanity's dweller on the threshold right now, maybe in a terrible and dangerous form than it has ever been, even now. So we will have to dispel this dweller by recognizing it and facing it and taking those measures which will negate it and disperse it. Disperse, dissipate, dispel, three aspects of the dweller, Maya, glamour, and illusion. And whereby the forces of hate, of cruelty, and of materialism, they all go together, and of darkness may be driven back, wherever found, before the sweeping onslaught of the forces of light. This has not been achieved, but the potential is here enunciated. And we ourselves want to be part of that sweeping onslaught of the forces of light, so that as in the meditation in Rule 10 of Rays and Initiations, these forces may be driven back onto the astral plane, driven out of the ethers, where they can immediately affect conditions in the world, and then later they will be dealt with on the astral plane, and then perhaps driven back to the mental plane, where then later they will be dealt with again. We can't do everything at once, as desirable as that might seem to us. So let us begin by eliminating the undesirable elements within ourselves, part of the purification process. Cast out all fear, all hate, all greed. You know, look somewhere there in Treatise on White Magic around page 473 and you'll see 15 counsels how to deal with our thought and desire apparatus in such a way that eventually we could, following these instructions, become adepts ourselves. But those are very practical pieces of device, and let within each one of us there be our own microcosmic sweeping onslaught of the forces of light, driving away those vestiges of ancient action, ancient motives, all that is low and base within us. It might be pointed out that just as the Aquarian Age is coming into manifestation for our planet as a whole, bringing in its wake universal awareness, now that's the Aquarian word, universality, bringing in its wake universal awareness. Okay, let's get that back. And the new modes of expressing world synthesis. So universality and synthesis are two Aquarian watchwords. Of course, for better or for worse, you know, there can be the age of universal death and the synthesis of totalitarianism, or there can be universal life and sharing of the realization of unity and the realization of the true synthesis which unites us all in spirit. So just as the Aquarian Age is coming into manifestation for our planet as a whole, bringing in its wake universal awareness and the new modes of expressing world synthesis, of which our telecommunication system is certainly a promising one, and all that that may lead to, human interests and the world religion, not just fragmented religions, but one which is scientific and based upon true energies and their cycles. So humanity, the world disciple, is beginning to come under the influence of Taurus and What will that bring? Well, you know, among other things, illumination, enlightenment, far greater luminosity of the mind as it responds to the soul. Aquarius and Taurus are closely related, as stated, one relating to the new group of world servers and the other to the members of the hierarchy themselves. It is this influence which will bring about at this time the reversal of the wheel for those in the human family who are ready, and their numbers now are very great. They are not yet initiates, but they are those who can be, well, how do we reverse the wheel, you know? We reverse the wheel by becoming reoriented to higher values, which Taurus and Venus rule. So, Aquarius, Taurus together, maybe he means strictly Taurus, will bring the reversal of the wheel for those in the human family who are ready. And their numbers now are very great, I imagine in the millions. And also the sign opposite Scorpio is involved there. Scorpio opposite Taurus and also Libra involved in this reversal. If Taurus is involved, then the three signs having to do with sex per se, Taurus, Scorpio, and Libra, are all involved in this reversal. And Uranus rules the sacral center. How interesting. There has to be a reorientation of the energy of generation instead of widespread license. It has to serve a higher purpose. Many human beings are going in just the opposite direction, but I think that will be stopped in the next number of years. The creativity of humanity would be challenged if that tendency continued. But with the elevation of the energy at the sacral center, the throat center, which is so necessary in the first initiation, creativity will blossom, humanity will be prepared for that initiation, and Uranus will be effective as Aquarius comes in. In the disciple, the throat center eventually will be ruled by the seventh ray, which implicates Uranus. So Uranus is involved in this migration or this transfer from the sacral center to the throat center. This is happening. The reversal of the wheel is happening for those members of the human family who are ready. And the results are inevitable and cannot be evaded. So the end is sure, even if delay may eventuate. I guess we have much of the time factor as our own responsibility. The plan will work out by whatever means and methods pursued. They're ever-changing, and the hierarchy often adapts them to the need. And the purpose will be fulfilled. But how we get there and the time spent in getting there, these are very much in the hands of intelligent humanity, or humanity which is supposed to be intelligent. The great question is, will this Taurian influence, increased as it is by the incoming of Shambhala forces, because remember, Taurus and Shambhala are allied. So will this Taurian influence, increased as it is by the incoming Shambhala forces, produce a floodlight of illumination, of which Taurus is the custodian, the mother of illumination? Or will it simply foment desire, increase selfishness, and bring humanity to the fiery heights of self-interest? Aspirational idealism, I suppose, can be transposed into the desire to attain the fiery heights of egoism, of self-interest, instead of to the mountain of vision and initiation. This is such a wonderful contrast. I don't remember seeing it in such an isolated form, that under Taurus, and presumably under the power of Capricorn, which elevates, but which is also a sign of great ambition, the human beings can respond in such a way that they reach egoistically and in their integrated personality and nature towards the fiery heights, I suppose fire by friction, fiery heights of self-interest. And their incentive is purely for that which the astral body desires, instead of to the mountain of vision and initiation. Vision, Taurus, initiation, Capricorn. And an aspect of vision also belongs to Capricorn, because the Ajna Center, the Brow Center, are involved. Maybe the Brow Center is a little different from the Ajna Center per se. But that long horn of the unicorn is an instrument of power and an instrument of vision, penetrating vision, maybe of an even more exalted kind than becomes possible under Taurus. So I'm looking at this phrase, the fiery heights of self-interest, and thinking about the possible selfishness of the Taurian individual, so often demonstrated because of concentration of consciousness within the grasping astral body. Ambition is there in Taurus, the fulfillment of desire, and ambition is there in Capricorn as well. And perhaps the hierarchy itself does not know the answer to this question, though Christ and his hierarchy are doing everything possible to see that there is no final war. A chilling thought, isn't it? A final war, driving humanity back to rudimentary roots, having to start all over again. Hierarchy is doing all that it may, all that is within its power under the law to do, and leaving human free will untouched, not compelling the will as the Black Lodge will do. So the great question is, and perhaps it's a question to hierarchy, will this Taurian influence, increased as it is by the incoming Shambhala forces, not just force, that we sometimes talk about the Shambhala force, but we also talk about purification, destruction, and organization, but the incoming Shambhala forces produced the floodlight of illumination. It seemed promising there, certainly for a while during the 60s, 70s, and so forth, with the consciousness movement advancing so powerfully. The floodlight of illumination, of which Taurus is the custodian. Or will it simply foment desire, increase selfishness, and bring humanity to the fiery heights of self-interest? This is an unresolved question. It would be nice if everything was resolved and we could say definitely humanity will make the right choice and there will be no delay and all will be well soon. But the testing times immediately ahead will determine whether there will be delay, because it's in this, interestingly, in this chapter on Taurus that DK talks about delay, and Taurus is a sign known in its lower expressions for its slow response, for its inertia, its alliance to Tamas. Once it gets moving, of course, it's very Rajasic, and perhaps on the higher turn of the spiral, given the fourth ray's association with Taurus, it can become also Sattvic, which has to do with the equilibrium of the higher nature. So warnings are sounded here, and we will see a little bit later in the chapter that he talks about reinitiation into the earth. Taurus being a prominent earth sign, the first of the earth signs in the earth sign triplicity. And what could that mean and how long could it last? We see the retrogressive tendencies even now and the elemental nature of humanity resisting that which is promised. And we wonder, can we possibly be so weak and so ignorant and so resistant to the lessons we should have learned that we will allow this to happen? The judgment is not in on this yet, and I think it's shaping up, and I think during the teens of this century, we'll see the judgment made. So this is the situation which confronts the knowers of the race in their various grades of knowledge and illumination at this time. The different members of the hierarchy are differently illuminated, obviously. That's why it's called the hierarchy. Neither of these influences, the Taurian or the Aquarian, can be avoided. So not only is it the age of Aquarius, but Taurus is coming in very powerfully with the Shambhala impact, you see, or Shambhala impacts. With the Shambhala impacts, the energy of Taurus is strengthening. As you will see when we study the analysis of this sign and come to a consideration of its rulers, Taurus forges the instruments of constructive living. Now there we have two ideas. The idea of the forge, which is related to the blacksmith, which is related to Hephaestus, Vulcan. However this is spelled, Hephaestus, okay, Vulcan, the blacksmith. Because we are at this time creating forms which will be of value or which will be inimical to the progress of humanity. So Taurus is also one of the building signs. Vulcan has its constructive part, and building in beauty is connected with the fourth ray influence coming through Taurus. So Taurus forges the instruments of constructive living or of destruction, and Vulcan is involved, as we sadly understand, in weaponry, which is now wreaking so much havoc upon human beings in various places, many of those who are unprepared and defenseless. Taurus and Vulcan working in the metallic nature of matter, making those hard and resistant forms which can be used constructively or destructively through weaponry. We are either building a new world at this time, or we are in process of creating weapons which can destroy it. The release of the Shambhala power through atomic energy, if you think about it, is so Taurian, this blinding light. Matter is light. Matter is energy. Well, Taurus is light and energy. And matter has been converted through the formula E equals MC squared, or the conversion of matter has been seen as possible, and through the invention of the atomic weaponry, matter has been converted into light, into energy. So will that be a source of liberation under Uranus, or will it be the destruction of humanity, as the Tibetan tells us, is an outcome, a possibility that can be visioned? So it forges the chains which bind or creates the key which unlocks the mystery of life. And every time we find the word key, we think of fifth ray, Oop, fifth round. That won't do. Fifth ray, and the mineral kingdom, in which those upon the fifth ray tend to work now. So, you know, give me the key. I alone can do no more good. Give me the key. This is the integration formula for the fifth ray, or is it rather the law of repulse for the fifth ray? So Vulcan, the mineral kingdom, the fifth ray, Taurus, Venus ruling the fifth ray, expressing the fifth ray, all these are related to each other. And we are in the process right now of creating weapons of terrible destruction, so-called conventional weapons, but, well, who knows what kinds of weapons are being created that could signal the end of humanity as we know it. So it is this forging process with its consequent clamor. One's reminded of the Wagner operas and the sound aspect of Taurus, of the the sound and noise aspect of Taurus, and of the hammer clanging on the anvil, the rhythmic pounding of the factories and the means of production of these objects, which is going on at this time in a most potent manner. Vulcan controls the anvil-like processes of time, because time gives the opportunity for the return of the cycle to a certain point. You know, even when you raise a hammer and strike, it's a certain, the cycle is raising and lowering, and at a certain point in this cycle there is the strike. So by repeated impact, the forging goes on. And we have, of course, the example of the blacksmith who, with repeated impacts, is bending heated metal into form. Of course, we have much more sophisticated ways of doing that now, but still the fire of the Agni Shaitans is involved, and the pressureful strokes of Vulcan are involved. Vulcan controls the anvil-like processes of time and strikes the blow, which shapes the metal, and we also are the metal, we too. The pressure of the Vulcan-like pressure of the soul beating us into shape, into form, which will be useful, shapes the metal into that which is desired. There's the element of desire with Taurus. DK weaves beautifully all of these ideas together, and this is true today as never before, subject to the anvil-like processes of time. So we're building, definitely building, and what are we building? We're building the means of our release, or we are building the means of our destruction. We could, under the fifth ray and Vulcan, rebuild a new world in which all had sufficient advantage, but we certainly have to cleanse the emotions and the mind, respectively, of glamours and illusions. Otherwise, those forms cannot be built, and if they were built, they would never last, because the inner cause would not be treated. The inner cause behind the creation of obstructive forms would not have been treated. Well, I think we're at a point here, close enough anyway, where we can end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 106B, page something. Page something. What page is it? Maybe I better go back and look, huh? Page 375. Okay. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 106, page 106C, page 375. That's what we'll do. We're in the middle of discussing one of the important rulers of Taurus, and that is Vulcan, and the building process, either building towards the New Age, Taurus, Vulcan in relation to Aquarius, or building towards enslavement, enchaining humanity to the material element, a new age of materialism, very possible during the Aquarian Age as Aquarius rules the lowest of the creative hierarchies, the baskets of nourishment or the blinded lives, the material lives. And Taurus is coming in with the Shambhala impacts, very possible for us also to build our own chains and enslave ourselves. I've been reading that slavery in some of its worst forms is still rampant in the world in various places. It's not as if it has been defeated for once and for all with the Civil War in the United States. It seems to be in the minds of some their right because of their superiority, supposed superiority, to enslave others. And the forging of those chains is also connected with Vulcan and also connected with Pluto. Pluto and Vulcan can be great liberators, but they can also be planets which negatively used chain and enslave. Okay. Till the next one.